this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hi everyone, this is episode 28. I'm recording this on Wednesday, January 18th, and my God, I have had an epic night with the kids, and I am exhausted and a little punch drunk, tired, but I really want to get this episode out there. I've been meaning to do this for days now, and you know when you just have in a week and you keep thinking you're going to have like that chunk of 20 minutes to do something and it never happens? That's been this week, but it's been that week in a good way, but still it's been that sort of week. And then tonight, Nathan had a work dinner, and Julian was sick today, took three naps instead of his usual one, and was feeling out of sorts and had a fever, but then the fever broke, so I thought, oh, he's just into regular cold territory, and he got really fussy all of a sudden, and I thought he was overly tired, and I put him to bed, and then there were screams, and this sometimes happens when he's overly tired and he just needs to scream for a few minutes and, you know, give vent to his exhaustion to the universe. But it just went to a pitch that wasn't right, so I went in, and he has been sleeping in the pack and play still in our guest room, and the crib is in Pippa's room, and the plan has always been for him to graduate to the crib, and we actually tried that a few days ago, last Friday, and we expected it to be a little difficult because Pippa would probably be really excited and might keep him up, but actually it was difficult because he just lost his shit and freaked out and did not want to be sleeping in the crib, so we rescued him and put him back in the pack and play and decided we'll try again at some point. So I go into the guest room. I'm home alone, no Nathan, him not coming at any point, and Julian is covered in vomit. And vomit is all over the pack and play. The sheets, the side of the pack and play, sort of the fake mattress that comes with a pack and play. So I have Julian out, and I have to get him out of the vomit clothes and into clean pajamas, and all he wants to do is snuggle, but you can't get the exterior cover off the mattress, so I've got that thing in the bath and I'm spraying it clean, and then I take a box of baking powder baking soda, because baking soda will absorb any vile smells, and I've had some experience with the vile smells of vomit on fabric, so I just covered the whole thing in baking soda, and it still is sitting in the bathtub covered in baking soda. I had to haul the pack and play out onto our front porch, which is covered, and it was pouring rain. So I wanted to get our hose to drench it down, but the hose was out in the rain, so I tried to do it with a pitcher, but the pitcher was not giving the velocity I needed. So in the end, I just went out in the rain and got wet and, you know, got out the hose and just washed off all the vomit. Julian loves going outside with me, so he was very aggrieved that I would not let him come out into the rain right after he had puked. So we were at this point, like, the pack and play is just not an option for tonight, and Nathan was still just like an hour and a half, he's still not even home yet, so there was just no chance of him getting home to help me. So I was like, all right, guess he's sleeping in the crib tonight. And I didn't want him to have to cry it out, so, you know, I put him in there, and we talked about it, and then I sang, and I just sang everything, and I was repeating songs, and then eventually I had to leave. I almost got him to sleep a few times, but he just needed some time in there to protest, and now he's asleep, and then I had to let Pippa fall asleep on me, and then I transferred her to bed, and now she's going to sleep with me tonight, and Nathan is going to have to sleep in the guest room. Anyway, I'm going to turn everything over to Jen Gaskell. Jen is an amazing mom. She had postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, OCD and intrusive thoughts. Basically, all of my, like, you know, all the ways you could diagnose me. But she had a lot of rage. And she just talks so candidly and honestly and warmly about her experiences and her recovery and her advocacy work now as a Warrior Mom ambassador. So here you go, Jen. Hi, Jen. Thanks for being on the show today.
Hi, Courtney. Thank you for having me.
And so you are coming to us from a winter wonderland right now in Wisconsin.
Yes. I live in Port Washington, Wisconsin. So it's a northern suburb of the city of Milwaukee.
Oh, I love Milwaukee. Been there a few times.
Beautiful right now, although I'm glad to be inside enjoying the snow. I'm not having to go anywhere.
Yeah, must be nice on Saturdays.
Yes.
Monday, work day, not so nice.
No, it can snow all at once on a weekend. I'm totally fine with that.
So you had postpartum depression?
Postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety, and I probably had some postpartum OCD too. I have intrusive thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of the ABC of diagnosis. I was officially diagnosed right after Mother's Day. I had it with my second daughter, and she was born in October of 2010, and I was diagnosed Mother's Day May of 2011. So I went quite a while before I decided to figure out what was going on with me.
Wait, do those numbers for me again? My brain just goes like, when I hear a number. Okay.
When I was finally diagnosed.
Thank you for humoring my...
A three and a half year old and a 7-month-old. So, yeah, I just thought that the transition from 1 to 2 is just too much for me, and I was a crappy mom, that I just couldn't handle anything. And I knew all these other people who had 2 kids, 4 kids, twins, and I was horrible, that it was all my fault, but, you know, I just couldn't handle it. And it really wasn't until for Mother's Day that year, for some reason, I was like, I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to do anything except go to my friend's yoga class. She was doing her yoga teaching certification, and she was offering a free class. And I'm like, that's all I want to do. I don't want to go out, have a fancy lunch. And so when we sat there in her class and I finally went into like that final relaxation pose, I'm like, oh my gosh, I finally feel slightly calm, and not completely keyed up. And then I realized that I've been feeling so anxious for, you know, basically 7 months that I hadn't really ever really, really and truly relaxed until like that moment. Like, okay, something is wrong. Something is really wrong, and I need to figure out what it is. So, and when I had talked to her, and I had remembered in the back of my head that she had postpartum depression with her first child, and she just talked to me a lot about the transition from 1 to 2 and that it's a lot, and that, you know, it gets better. And I didn't say anything to her at the time. I just was like, you know, she gave me a hug and was like, you know, you can do this. And I don't know if she really knew that I was struggling, because I didn't really say anything, and I was very good at faking it. I met my husband doing community theater, so kind of putting on that face of being the mom that was all together was what I did. So when I did decide, I Googled, like, I think I have postpartum anxiety. And Postpartum Progress was the website that I found. And it went through the plain Mama English symptoms of anxiety. And I printed it out and I started checking off all the boxes, like this. And all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, I'm pretty sure I have postpartum anxiety. Okay. So I went back to, we had gotten information from our hospital about a postpartum support group and the name of a therapist. So I called her and basically said, I think this is what I have. I'd like to get in and be seen. So, and then the next person after telling my husband, and the next person that I told was my cousin, who was a social worker. And I called her on my way home from work, I think after calling the therapist, and I just said, there's something wrong with me. I think it's postpartum anxiety. And then I burst out, you know, into tears while I'm on the phone and driving. And I had about a 45-minute commute out to a western suburb. So she was like, where are you? I'll come get you. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. I need to talk to somebody. And cause I hadn't heard back from the therapist right away. And I was like, how long should I wait? And it turned out that I actually got a call the very next day, and I was able to get into the therapist, I think, like 2 days later or something like that. So I was seen very quickly, which was great. And she is one of the few therapists that specialize in perinatal mood disorders in the city of Milwaukee, which is in the metro Milwaukee area, which is a very large area. And we basically have about three resources. So that was kind of my first journey. And when she actually gave me the diagnosis, it was a huge relief, because at first I thought it was like, you know, just this was going to be my personality, and this is how I was always going to be as a mom. You know, just anxious, couldn't sit still, didn't want to go anywhere with anybody. You know, all I did was go to work, come back, pump. You know, I didn't talk to anybody. I went from being very much an extrovert to not talking to my coworkers at all. I would just sit behind my desk and do my work, which should have been a warning flag for my coworkers and my boss, but, you know, nobody said anything.
So when your therapist gave you a diagnosis, was it just the postpartum anxiety?
It was the depression, too, as well. When we talked about my other symptoms, the rage, and I don't think I really talked so much about the rage right away with her, but just the irritability. I was very irritable, and I didn't have problems falling asleep. But I had the middle of the night insomnia, because I nursed both my daughters. And with Claudia, when she get up in the middle of the night, I wouldn't be able to go back to sleep. And I'd have to go check on everybody. And with really that middle of the night insomnia, and the just feeling like everything seemed like a chore and like drudgery. Like, it just felt like I was kind of moving through life at like a snail's pace. It took me so much energy to just get us out the door in the morning and then get to work and then come home and have to do it all over again, that I was just, my energy levels were really low too.
Mm-hmm. So what other symptoms did you have those 7 months leading up?
Well, I couldn't, unless I was nursing the baby, like I could not physically sit still without doing something. Like, I had to be doing something. I lost all the baby weight and then some, but like within the first 6 weeks, which is just too fast.
Right.
You know, everyone's like, oh, you're like, no, the other symptoms were the panic attacks. I had panic attacks, rage. I would cry, but it wasn't like, I wasn't crying all the time, but it would usually happen like I rage about something, like little things would bother me, like the coat wasn't put out right, or the bottles weren't washed, so I had to wash the bottles to send it to daycare. And it felt like I couldn't see any like end. You know what I mean? I didn't really look forward to anything. I just was like, I'm just slugging through each day.
Mm-hmm.
Felt like I was walking through like cement or quicksand. really, there was no pep. I mean, I would laugh at things, but I mean, I honestly do not remember a lot of Claudia's first couple months at all. That's all. I really, it just seems like a blur.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was, in terms of the anxiety, it was like, yeah, the physical sensation of not really being able to sit still. She, and we ended up right before I was supposed to go back to work for maternity leave. She was admitted into our local children's hospital here and was hospitalized with a bladder infection, which it turns out she has a bladder reflux condition. So here I was with a tiny, you know, not yet 3 month old infant that had to be admitted into the hospital to receive IV antibiotics, and I was just terrified. But then I would beat myself up because I'm like, well, your baby just has a bladder infection. You know, you're on the floor of the neuro wing where there are children with helmets on and that they're studying, you know, seizures and epilepsy and that, you know, they have the cancer floor. Like, you know, but I would yell that internal dialogue of like, she's not that sick and you should be okay with it, instead of, you know, giving myself that grace and going, this is scary. She's a baby, you know, came out of nowhere. We had no idea. And we wouldn't have known if she hadn't had that first bladder infection right away. That was really when my therapist and I talked about it, that was really like the tipping point that I think just sent me over the edge and just, you know, just really fueled that anxiety, because then I would check on both girls every night. Is everybody sleeping? Is my husband sleeping? He's a snore. Is everybody breathing? I couldn't relax. I felt like I was going to lose one of them.
I'm just, you can't see me. I'm just nodding away. You're describing so much, like, different experiences, but still so universal to me and other moms out there.
Yeah.
So, did things keep getting worse over the 7 months before you got diagnosed?
I would getting the two of them out the door in the morning seemed like I would be yelling at the three-year-olds, you know, the baby's not predictable, because of course they're not.
So right. Then,
you know, and I was worried about pumping and making enough, and with Kate, with my oldest, I started supplementing at 9 months, but with Claudia, I was determined, and I felt much more confident in nursing, and I was like, I'm going to do it. So what I did discover, though, that nursing was the one time that I actually relaxed, so which I think was unusual, but pumping was not relaxing at all. And because I commuted 45 minutes one way, I had to pump anywhere from 3 to 4 times a day at work. And that was I hated it. I hated it. And I had the ability to work from home, but my boss's boss was very, you know, you guys need to have FaceTime. So I never brought up the subject of working from home until my therapist was like, you need a break. You know, I think you should try and do 3 days a week. And I laughed. I was like, that's not going to happen. Not at the company that I work for. But I was able to get 1 day a week for 3 months after I got diagnosed. They wouldn't allow me to do any more than that because they didn't want to set a precedent for other employees.
Of course, because Erfie, all the men are getting postpartum depression.
Right. And what's even worse is that this is a large healthcare company.
Oh, of course it was. Oh, my God.
I no longer work for them.
Did you tell them what was going on? Or were you?
Yeah, I did. My doctor basically wrote a note, and I talked to my boss, and I ended up like crying in front of my coworkers at one point because I was just beside myself because I was not sleeping well, right? So, you know, they were like, oh, we all thought something was different. Oh my gosh, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I mean, I did really well that year. I got a fantastic review, but I wasn't, you know, everybody bothered me. I just, you know, that's why I didn't want to talk to them, which was, I think, some of the depression was, I was just very irritable. Like, every personality that I was able to just kind of let things go, it just grated at my nerves.
I find that so, the fact that you went back to work and still had all of this experience is, I don't know what the right word is. It's just, I think there's a lot of assumption. I know a lot of moms who think that going back to work is going to fix everything.
Right.
And it just doesn't. If like hormones are going crazy.
No, it didn't. And the fact that I knew that it was going to be a battle. So my first boss that I had, and it was essentially the same position or something very similar, a couple more responsibilities, but he had, when we talked about it, I went back to work, I think middle of the week, and he let me work from home right away, and I want to say it was for like the first 6 months to really just kind of let me transition back. But with the other boss, who's a female, it was not, there was a different manager above her, and again, like I said, he was very, you know, old school, you need face time in the office, even though it was a job that could be done very well from home.
It's like every time I think, I need to keep hearing these stories because I feel like I get insulated because like we're both part of the Warrior Mom community.
Yeah.
So we all get it. So I keep, you know, interacting with people who get how awful this experience is and I need to be reminded. And sometimes I start to get like complacent, like, oh, well, there isn't that much more work we have to do with like increasing awareness and reducing stigma. And then you tell me the story and I'm like, oh, no, we have so much more work to do.
Right, and it's, you know, and then, you know, to make appointments with my therapist, I ended up doing that on that one day that I could work from home, or I do really later evening appointments with her, which was wonderful, but, you know, I mean, just to try and do that. And the other thing is, with my maternity leave, And FMLA, I got paid, but I basically, you exhausted all of your paid time off and all of your sick days.
Right.
The pregnancy, and we had it on a rolling calendar year, so you wouldn't start accruing them back. So then, you know, that was added pressure, like, I can't have a child get sick, and, you know, and to play that game of, well, I don't have time, so my husband has to take off, and, you know, I mean, it's just, it's really ridiculous to expect people to do all this. And at the time, my parents were both still working. They're now retired. But so I had some help in the beginning when my daughter was born. My husband stayed home. I think he had vacation. So between the births of our two, he actually did have the company had the benefit of 1 week of paid parental paternal leave, and then they removed that benefit right before Claudia was born. So it's like, I mean, you just, they make it way too difficult to try and transition back. And when you have grandparents who all were working, his parents were also working as well, too, we didn't have that family support that we needed.
Yeah, and it's not like we're living in a society where we have tons of built-in support,
mm-hmm.
where we're in villages and people, you know, women are just there and we're able to. No, we all are going off to jobs, so jobs need to be a little as understanding as they can be.
Right. Well, so the one thing that I did do before I left my previous employer was I actually, we had a women's network there, and I did a presentation for everyone about my journey with postpartum depression and provided information from Postpartum Progress, because the information that we had, you could find it, but it was, like, buried, and they also didn't make it very well known. I had to go, and then I had to confirm with benefits that we actually had, I believe it was up to 6 counseling sessions free through our EAP, our employee assistance provider. And again, it, you have to make that call instead of, you know, knowing that information, which was just, like, I shouldn't have to do all this work for myself. It should just be there at my fingertips.
And right.
It was just, it was really interesting because there were some women who were pregnant who actually came to hear it. And then two of my coworkers came just only to support me, really. It was really wonderful. And then another friend who had had postpartum depression came as well to listen. But I kind of took that experience and was like, okay, you know what, we need to do better, and here's what I'm going to do. And so I just went on to Twitter because I opened up a Twitter account shortly after, I think it would have been like August. So like 3 months, and I was on PPD chat, which Lauren Hale ran. And so I went onto Twitter, and that was where I kind of found my online tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And from there it was like, oh my gosh, there's other people and they're like me and they're struggling too, but it's okay. And I can find that assistance, and maybe my support's not local, but I have my therapist and medication, and the online support was everything. It was the lifeline I really needed. And then later on that year was when I actually started the blog. But it was just so nice to be able to, you know, in the community was fairly global. So if you were having an issue in the middle of the night, you could hear from, I don't know if you got a chance to meet you at the Warrior Mom conference, but one of the moms from Australia, there were two that could just say, oh my gosh,
I met Abby from Australia.
Oh, you did? Okay.
But I don't think I met the other Australian mom.
You didn't meet you. Yeah, she was fantastic because you could just chat with mom all over and just use that Twitter hashtag. And then what I realized, I kept seeing this woman goes by the Empress, and then I found her blog, Good Day Regular People, Alexandra Rosas, and she was actually a local blogger to me. And local, I mean, she lives 15 minutes away from me and about 5 minutes from my sister-in-law. So I reached out to her. Probably would have been a while into my recovery, and we met up for coffee, and it was like, oh my gosh, to finally meet someone local that gets it and, you know, just gives you a hug and is like, you're getting better, and I can see it, and can you see it too? And that, I think that made a huge difference too, was just somebody else that was willing to listen to your story. And with that, then, Alexandra asked me to be a part of Listen to Your Mother Milwaukee, the production team. So this year is actually going to be our final year, but it'll be our fifth and final year putting on Listen to Your Mother Milwaukee, and every year we've had a postpartum depression story. So the first year was my story. So I helped produce the show and then also tell my story each year. There's been a mom in the audience who then comes back up and is part of the cast the next year. They're so moved by hearing someone else's story, and that just again furthered my passion for being able to tell my story or being able to listen to other people's stories, because it's like, you know, it's maybe you didn't have that, but you can relate to how hard motherhood is and mm-hmm. how challenging it can be. And there can be those tiny circles of joy and how to find those. And I mean, it just.
What is Listen to Your Mother? I haven't heard of this.
Listen, so it's a live storytelling show. You don't have to be a blogger. You don't have to be a writer. And it's, you know, a 5-minute story, about motherhood. It can be, you know, we call it the bitter and the sweet of motherhood. It's funny.
Oh, I hope that they have it in L.A.
What?
I hope they have it out here where I am.
Yes.
Oh, you have a kid who came in.
Yes.
Real life happening, folks. Fantastic. I'll put the links in the show notes.
Yeah.
I want to see these. I need to go. I'm going to go home and ignore my children and watch them.
Yeah. I've watched my story maybe only 3 times now. It's less painful, but I still cry when I watch it. I still cry.
You know, sometimes we do have to keep crying.
It,
my psychologist who treated me right after I was diagnosed told me, you're like a pressure cooker and you're just going to have to keep letting off steam.
Yeah. That sounds a lot like, yeah. It's like the pot boiling over, right?
Yes. So what worked with you in terms of your recovery?
Medication. Zoloft. I think I still continue to be on it because I had struggled with generalized anxiety disorder for, basically since my 20s.
Uh-huh.
And I probably had it even prior to that, looking back on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I tried weaning down in the summer because they don't recommend that folks up, you know, here in the Midwest try to wean off during the winter months. They don't recommend. And I could tell the difference in my brain chemistry immediately. And then I also had to readjust my levels again after my husband had his vasectomy and I went completely off birth control, which I'd been on, you know, basically for years and years, with mm-hmm. the exception of, you know, trying to conceive and get pregnant. And so I had to bump up my dose again, and just, that is just the level that I require. And I think, you know, the medication, the therapy, I see her now, you know, every couple months, the advocacy, the, you know, writing my blog, the online community, all these amazing women that I've met, and research and understanding the basis of these mood disorders, and then starting to do a little bit more digging into my own family history.
Mm-hmm.
I had found out that my grandma had postpartum depression, and I call her the queen of self-care because this was my paternal grandma, she would take a nap every day. She had 7 children. So, good Catholic family. Yeah, I know.
How did she do this? Can she, like, come on the show?
Right? Unfortunately, she has passed.
I'm sorry.
But it's just one of those things where you're like, I wish I would have known. And she, again, was someone who was always very anxious. And not that I ever noticed that, but that's because she was on, she had been on lifelong, you know, they just called it her nerve medication. She had a, you know, nervous breakdown. What does that mean? What does a nervous breakdown mean? Like, and then you find out that it's really, it was all anxiety based.
Right.
Well, then there's this genetic predisposition. So then I wrote out this, like, gigantic Facebook message and private message to a bunch of my cousins. And even people who hadn't even gotten married. I was just like, you all need to know this, that there's a family history. And I do not care what time of day it is, day or night. You call me. Here's my cell phone number. This was hell for me. And I don't want any of my family to feel that way. Because I just, I thought that it would, you know, I don't ever want to see some mom go as long as I did because, you know, when we look back on it, I struggled with perinatal anxiety and depression. I was so anxious during the pregnancy. I had gestational diabetes with my first pregnancy. So with the second one, they basically had me follow the diet and test my blood sugar 4 times a day, and you have to submit a meal diary, and you're testing yourself, and I was just fixated because I was terrified that I was going to have to be put on some type of medication, and I didn't know what that was going to do with the baby, and they really, like, strike the fear of God in you that you have to be compliant, and I couldn't get one of my morning fasting numbers down, and I didn't know why. I didn't know what I was doing. And then the more research I've done and found connection with the diabetes, they call them the DOC, the Diabetes Online Community, that your glucose, the meters and the strips that you use have a tolerance, right? So you could be in or out of range for, like, the FDA's guidance, like 3 to 5%, which could be an incredible, that could mean a lot. Like, mm-hmm. I could have been eating something that I shouldn't have or, you know, lower than I thought I was, and that was really frustrating to me. Uh-oh.
Did you have gestational diabetes with number two?
Yeah. So I was seen by both an endocrinologist, my OB, who also happened to be a high-risk OB, and a diabetes educator. So they all missed it. You know, they missed that I was a complete anxious mess the entire time.
And was this, do you think you had any symptoms with your first pregnancy, or it's just all the second?
Looking back, I would say that I definitely had, like, a mild case mm-hmm. with my first, but I talked to people. I reached out. I talked to my mom. I talked to my sister. I talked to my sister-in-law. I talked to a friend who had twin girls that were the same age as my oldest, so... and just after 9 months, I just all of a sudden seemed to just kind of feel better magically at 9 months. And I think with my youngest, it just kept getting worse and worse. I didn't seem to be coming out of it. I just kept going down. And then the intrusive thoughts were just terrifying because they all involved me driving in a car and crashing with the girls in my car, or just what would happen if I just jerked my wheel into oncoming traffic, which is scary when you're driving at top speeds on, you know, a highway.
Right.
And on a two-lane highway, and you think, what would happen if I just do that? I just shake my head and just keep driving. And it was, and I think that also made going to work exhausting, too, because I was basically, like, white-knuckling it the entire time. But I really pushed those thoughts down so far that it took me well into my recovery before I could finally go, oh my gosh, I have these thoughts. And holy crap, were they scary. And, you know, really process that and grieve about that. You know, like, I was miserable and I didn't know what to say. And it wasn't until, you know, when I told my husband, he was like, well, you just haven't been yourself since you were pregnant. And whatever we need to do, we'll figure it out. So, I mean, I was very lucky that he stepped up and he did everything. I couldn't go to the grocery store. I couldn't grocery. Like, the grocery store overwhelms me, going out to eat over, he did so much. It's amazing when I look back on it. I mean, because he really bore the brunt of my irritability and my rage, and so did my 3-year-old. At my lowest point, I pushed my husband in front of my daughter, and that was one of the keys where I was like, okay, there's something wrong. And I told him, you know, you should just leave me. You should just leave. Because I thought he and the girls would be better off if he just left me, because I was just a complete total bitch.
Well, you bore the brunt. He took the secondary brunt.
Right. But, you know, I mean,
but I know.
It took me, again, a long time to get past that guilt that I felt, that I had damaged my child, that, you know, I actually, like, once I discovered it all, I talked to Kate's preschool teacher, I think when she was going into, like, 4K. Yeah, 4 pre-K, and I just said, look, I went through this, and I don't know how it's affected her, and just be mindful, because I ask more questions, and I have just addressed that with a lot of their teachers now, that, you know, I have anxiety, so I may ask more questions than the average parent, and this is where I'm coming from, and I think that helps, but I just, yeah, I kept telling, like, do you remember when mommy was mad and sad all the time? And my oldest was like, no, mommy, I don't really remember. So that made me feel so much better. And then this last year, after listening to your mother, Claudia said, I want to hear your story, mommy. And so we sat and watched the video together. And she's like, the baby, I was your baby. And I'm just sobbing and patting my face and my cheek. I'm like, I love you, mommy. Like that, I didn't realize that I needed that to like come full circle and to really feel like, okay, I'm healed,
mm-hmm.
completely healed, because, you know, they love me no matter what, you know, and I can be the fun mom and, you know, and have fun and dance with them and sing with them and not, you know, not be this grouchy person all the time.
And having had postpartum depression and anxiety didn't ruin anything.
No. And I think that's really important for moms to remember, because it's like, you know what? Now they will fight over me sometimes. Like, who do I get to lay down with and read a book at night? So I sometimes feel bad for my husband, but I don't mind it, right? I enjoy it because it's nice to enjoy that time.
Yeah, you're the rock star.
Right. Yeah, after feeling like you were, you know, just a complete and total failure.
So the rage and irritability, that just, I guess I want to ask you more about it. I don't know what to ask, just because it's part of the spectrum of symptoms, but we don't hear about it a lot.
So for me, I always called it like I wrote about it. I'll have to send you the link. I know I wrote about it on my blog and on Postpartum Progress too. That it was like I would go from 0 to 60. So really what I discovered as I kept going through it was like when the anxiety was unchecked, when the anxiety was just so high, then it was the irritability and the rage, and I could feel it like in my body physically, like my face would get flushed, my ears, I would be all, you know, clenched, and then I would just explode. And it was just, and then immediately afterwards, I'd feel ashamed and guilty, and like, you know, what is my, and it would be over the littlest thing, you know, and it was kind of like that analogy that you gave, that you were a pressure cooker, and that it was just, I was so angry, but I didn't know what I didn't have enough time to press what I was angry about, because there were a million things I was upset about. I wanted the chance to work from home. You know, I wanted to just be easier. I wanted to not feel so defeated. You know, I was angry at myself. You know, I think it just, no one talked about it because, you know, motherhood's supposed to be amazing and wonderful, and you just feel like you're you're just this raging bitch, and you have, you just think that's your personality. Like, this is my personality now after Kit. But you don't realize that that's not normal. And I have a temper, but, like, this was nothing. It felt like the Incredible Hulk, right? Like, you just want to Hulk smash something. I mean, I was like, that is totally what it felt like. You just want to, I want to break something or throw something. I mean, I can't tell you how many things I ruined, really. I mean, throwing, slamming doors. I mean, just, it was, you know, you think of, like, toddlers' temper tantrums, but it was worse because you were an adult and you were, it made me feel out of control and powerless. And I think that's what a lot of the postpartum mood disorders make you feel, that you're, like, powerless and that you're out of control and you don't know what's going on. And, you know, you have to do that work, that hard work of therapy and go, like, okay, what was going on, and examine each feeling and say, you know what, this is valid. It's okay to be mad. Like, you know, our society is, you know, if you're a woman and you express anger or frustration, it's always, you know, you're being a bitch.
Right.
And, you know, really trying to, like, go back even, you know, to some of that, I don't want to say programming, but, you know, the messages that you hear at the shelf, you know, if you don't have anything nice to say, you don't say it at all. And be nice, be kind, and not making place for anger and for frustration. And that if you motivate, you know, if you use that anger and frustration as fuel, you can, you know, you can affect change. You can affect change in your community if you are able to find some type of outlet for it, right? I mean, I think after I started healing emotionally, then it was, how can I feed myself creatively? So that was the blog and listen to your mother. And then after that, it was finally, once I was on the medication, then all of a sudden the weight came back because I started feeling good. So then it was getting physically fit again. And I think it's all of those outlets really, you know, were kind of what I needed to help myself get better, because I feel like you need to think of each piece and your social support. And then the more I told my story, it turns out, like, half my neighbors also struggle with postpartum depression. And it's only because I'm the loudmouth one about it that more people have come out of the woodwork to tell me, like, thank you for sharing your story. I struggle with it too. And it was just, it was amazing to me, because, you know, at first I thought, well, not a big deal. I just keep talking about it, and, you know, but then so many people have come up to me and said, thank you for sharing your story, and, or, you know, have messaged me privately to say, I struggle with it too, you know, thank you for speaking up. I don't feel like I can.
Yeah, there's so many of us, it seems like, telling our stories, but we need to.
Right.
Because it's just such a common universal experience.
Yeah. And I think so many people, they just don't, I think it's just that stigma is still, you know, isolating and shaking, and you're like, you, because yes, motherhood can be wonderful, and I love my girls, and they're so much fun, and they make me crack up, but gosh, it can be really hard someday.
Oh.
You know, even now, the fact that, you know, mine are, like I said, they're so, mine are in school, they're potty trained, they're, you know, we're reading now, which means you can't spell things out to each other anymore. But, you know, they're still, okay, now we're starting a 9-year-old. I'm going to be getting into, like, the tween years and that other different type of conversation. It's like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I can't even. I don't want to think about that yet.
No, I'm not ready yet either. I'm still in denial.
So before we finish up, I wanted to ask you about being a Warrior Mom ambassador.
Yeah. So I kind of came about it, in fact, when Miranda sent me back the application to me and said I was approved, she's like, it's about time. So I was a part of the editorial team at Postpartum Progress, so I wrote for the blog for quite a while, and then I was also helping to lead Climb Out of the Darkness in our area. And what happened was I was like, oh my gosh, I'm overwhelmed. I'm doing too much. I can't. I need to step away from the blog. And I made that decision, I think. I forget how long ago that was, but I said to Catherine, you know, like, it honestly was my privilege to write, but I'm like, I want to see where I'm needed, and I feel like locally is where I'm needed most.
Mm-hmm.
So then the more I kept looking at the Warrior Mom Ambassadors, I'm like, well, I'm really doing a lot of this already, and I just, knowing that Listen to Your Mother was winding down, I was like, okay, this is my chance. This is my opportunity to, because this really is my passion. So, you know, I'm unable to lead anything locally in terms of, like, in-person support group, but we have a Facebook group from everyone that's gone to our Climate of the Darkness, and we'll message. It's a secret Facebook group, and we add people after each climb, and I started making contacts with some of the local therapists and really just kind of getting it out there and seeing how we can get more of the women in our community engaged. And my other, I was a Spanish communication major, so I'm bilingual, and Milwaukee has quite a huge population of Latina women. And so I, in the new year, I'm going to be meeting with she's a counselor and also a professor through Marquette University, and we're going to be kind of brainstorming together how we do more outreach to the community. Because our local climb is held directly in the city of Milwaukee,
mm-hmm.
so it's accessible to anyone that's on a bus line, because we want to make sure that it was that it's in the city, so it feels like it's for everyone. And again, we just want to keep doing more outreach. And I realize now I have a newer job. I've been there just almost a year. I'm right in the heart of the city again, so it's going to be really fantastic to be able to just, like, drop off climb flyers, you know, put them up at the Starbucks, put it up at, you know, there's local churches around, and really just get as many, you know, just as many moms out there to know that it's, you know, you don't have to raise money. You can just come as you are. We don't care. And my daughters have climbed with me every year, and it's really funny because the days that it'll happen, you know, I just always prepare them and say, remember, this is, you know, when mommy was, I said she had, was kind of sick. My, you know, my brain was sick, and so I take my patients, I call them my patients' pills, to make me feel better, and I'm here to help other mommies. And they're so fantastic. It's like they don't even now they will tell me it's kind of boring, even though they like to help me put up flyers, but they will, you know, and they like to hang out with some friends that they know out of our local group, because we started to get a pretty good sized local group, which is fantastic. And I've been in contact with the Warrior Mom Ambassadors in Madison. And then I know you had Ashley on, that's Mom to Mom in Oshkosh. And she was going to come to our climb in Milwaukee, and unfortunately she has, I think, one of her kids got sick. So I wasn't able to meet her in person. But yeah, it's growing each year. We keep getting more and more moms, and we're starting to make a lot of inroads within the healthcare community, the doctors, OBs. I talk about it every time I'm with my OBGYN and my pediatrician. My general doctor, she's a internal medicine / psychiatrist, so that was a very positive change. She's the one who manages all of my medication now, which was fantastic.
And so Warrior Mom Ambassador, for anyone listening out there, it's basically a role for moms like you, mm-hmm. who want to spread the word even more,
yes.
about, like, postpartum progress and the peer-to-peer support that's available and other resources.
Yes.
And this is something... I think anyone in the world can apply to do this, right?
Anyone. It's open to anyone, and it's really, we have the, you know, the hug cards. I keep them in my purse. I actually just handed out one the other day when I was talking to someone who was concerned about his partner and how she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just, you never know. I ran into a woman in, I think, Kohl's department store last year during Christmas, and we got to talking, and again, I gave her a hug card, I gave her my blog card, and I think the more we take those opportunities just to have a conversation and just to see, you know, how is mom really doing, checking on people, because it can be really tough. I mean, I, in preparation for my, I have a niece who's just a year, and when my sister-in-law was expecting, I, like, peppered my brother-in-law, my husband's brother, like, all this information. But again, you know, just because I was like, this is what I feel, and I'm the person at the baby showers, family baby showers, who writes, like, this long-winded, separate message and puts my blog card and a hug card in there and just says, you know what, again, if you need anything, please let me know. Please let me know. Because, again, I just, you know, I want to, people know when they see me post on Facebook, but also going that extra mile and just, you know, letting people know that you're there and that, you know, you just talk to me. And this, you know, it goes nowhere, right? You know.
Yeah,
nowhere. But you know, I'm a safe, non-judgmental place to talk about it. And even if it's, you know, even if you're not having postpartum depression, but you're just struggling to adjust to parenthood, please, like, there's no judgment here. You know.
Yes, the struggle is real.
It is. It is. And I think, you know, by sugarcoating it and having these unrealistic expectations, it's like we do ourselves a disservice. We're like, why don't I have it together? Nobody has it together, and if they do, there's probably something else. You know what I mean?
They have a personal assistant,
right.
And like multiple cleaning ladies,
right? And a trainer, and
a chef, everything.
Yeah. Like, don't look at those, you know, body attribute. Like, don't. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much.
I love talking to you. And I'd love to talk to you again about the climb as we get closer.
Yeah.
Give people ideas. I'm going to be helping with the LA climb this year. So I'm like ready to get going. But I know that, like, because we're recording this right now before Christmas, everyone listening. So it's like, okay, I have to wait till after the holidays because it's going to fall on deaf ears.
Yes. And I kind of have to measure my effort, and I'm so grateful. This year there's going to be three of us. Last year I did the climb just by myself when I was a little overwhelmed. We've got three of us this year, and so kind of trying to, like, okay, what do I need to do for Listen to Your Mother? What do I need to do for that? And something little, because they're such big projects that, but just kind of doing things each week. And we did some fun stuff last year, and I just want to, you know, kind of been brainstorming about, you know, do we do a potluck picnic? I don't know. Just trying to write things down as I get
so many ideas.
Right? Otherwise they're gone.
Yeah, I have a document open, always open in my iPhone on my notes, and I just keep putting my ideas there. So I'll put all this in the show notes, but do you want to just finish up telling our listeners where they can find you?
Yeah. I'm on Twitter. Like Twitter, I'm not as much anymore, but I'm at Jen Ren Pody, P-O-D-Y. I'm on Facebook, and my blog is Tranquila Mama, so TranquilaMama .wordpress.com. And you can also, I have a Climb Out of the Darkness page, Team Milwaukee, that I manage as well, too. And then you can also find me at listentoyourmothershow.com/Milwaukee. And I think we actually have our YouTube playlist is probably linked there from the past couple seasons. So, yeah, that's where you can find me. So if you Google YouTube and Jen Gaskell, you will see my Your Mother story come up, which is
I will definitely put that in like, the I will put that in the show notes too.
It's amazing, but it was also the Brené Brown, the vulnerability hangover after they first went live. But it's scary and exhilarating, but it's very empowering to tell your story and to realize that you can reach so many people, and that you can. If I can just offer one person hope that they can get through it, it's worth it.
So that's it for this week. Sorry if the end of my intro was a little rushed. I could hear Nathan coming in, and I knew he would interrupt, and I'd have to re-record everything, and I'm just too tired to do that. And I didn't want to go to bed without getting this episode posted. When I spoke to Jen, it was right before Christmas, and she lives in Wisconsin, and it was snowing. She was in a bit of a winter wonderland, and at one point in the interview, the call got dropped, so I did my best with the editing, but I bet you can figure out the point where the call got dropped, because when we got reconnected, we suddenly had a better connection, and her voice came in a little more clearly, but, you know, through rain and snow, the postpartum depression women we go. So that's it for this week. I have another great interview for you coming up next week. Postpartum depression is a very lonely illness, but thousands of women before you have had it, and thousands of women right now have it, and you are not alone. I love you, and have a great week.